morning. This is Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today I'll be talking with Mike Reichenbach, a University of Minnesota Extension Educator in Forestry. He's based at the Cloquet Forestry Center just south of Duluth, and today we'll be talking about the emerald ash borer. Thank you so much for being here today, Mike.
Yes, I'm glad to be here.
What is your background?
I have a degree in forestry from the University of Illinois, and I also have a degree in education, so hence extension educator in forestry. I have worked in forestry for 36 years and have worked in urban forestry, in traditional forestry, meaning growing trees for forest uses, lumber, timber, and aesthetics.
That sounds like really exciting work.
Yeah, I've had fun with it. I've worked in three different states. I started my career in Illinois working as an urban forester, looking to identify Dutch elm disease. And I moved on to the state of Oregon, where I ran a tree care business doing pruning and removal and then pre-commercial thinning to improve the health of trees. Mm-hmm. So mountain pine beetle was an important forest pest of the early 1980s and has become even more devastating as we look at Colorado and see how many trees it's killed there. Mm-hmm. But the work I did was to go ahead and thin forests to reduce the impact of mountain pine beetle. I then moved back to Illinois and ran the urban forestry program for the state of Illinois. And from there, In 1990, I moved back to Oregon and became a reforestation forester. In other words, I learned a lot about planting trees to grow new forests. And so I did that for several years. And then in 1999, I moved to Minnesota.
Did you move straight up to Cloquet?
I did. And for me, Cloquet was kind of full circle. The University of Illinois used the Cloquet Forestry Center, which is where I'm based, as their forestry summer camp. And so in the 70s, I came here as a student, and then we went up to Isabella, Minnesota, and spent 7 weeks in Isabella at what was the Environmental Learning Center there, which was Wolf Ridge. That was the original location for Wolf Ridge. And so I spent 7 weeks there in the 70s studying Minnesota trees and the understory and all of that. And so that served me really well. And the work I do in Minnesota right now, I characterize as restoration forestry. So I've done a lot of work along the North Shore looking at restoration of conifers to that birch forest that we're so used to. Mm-hmm. and so concerned about its decline.
I guess to start talking about the emerald ash borer, I think it's been on a lot of people's minds since it was confirmed on Park Point in Duluth. Can you start out by describing what is emerald ash borer?
Sure. Let's start off with the insect itself. Emerald ash borer is an insect that comes from Asia. Its primary species that it feeds on there is Manchurian ash. And the tree and the insect there have adapted together. They've co-evolved, co-adapted, mm-hmm. so that as emerald ash borer attacks the ash trees, the Manchurian ash in mm-hmm. Asia, the ash trees there are able to put out chemicals that slow the feeding down of these borers and allow the insect to live, but the tree can continue growing.
Oh.
Our trees in Minnesota, and we have black ash, white ash, but mainly along, say, the St. Croix River, not so much in the Arrowhead, and green ash. So the ones that we'd encounter around Two Harbors are the black ash and the green ash. Those trees don't put out those chemicals to slow the feeding down. Then the emerald ash borer numbers overwhelm the tree's defenses, mm-hmm. and the borers girdle the tree. And so let me back up a little bit and talk a little bit about the life cycle of the insect, okay? So this insect is a small insect. It's a beautiful emerald green, But it's very small, so you can probably fit 10 or 15 of these insects on the head of a dime. You know, they're small insects. They're not very big, and they're a boring insect. They're related to our bronze birch borer. They're related to that, but they're not the same. They're a little different. They only affect ash trees and true ash trees, not mountain ash. We've got a lot of mountain ash in the Arrowhead, but they won't touch mountain ash. Okay, so they go ahead and they'll lay eggs in the cracks and the crevices of the trees. The eggs will hatch and the larvae will bore into the tree, and it's the larva that does the damage. Now the beetles do a little bit of feeding in the tree, but doesn't do much damage to the tree. It's really the larva that hurts the tree. And then the beetle itself, when these larvae go ahead and finish their life cycle and turn into beetles again, they'll fly, but they really only fly about a mile to 2 miles. They can go maybe six, maybe the wind will carry them farther, but they stay pretty close to home, really. And so the real risk is with emerald ash borer is that we move it in the firewood that we carry, or it gets moved in materials that we ship back and forth, and that's the real risk. So the infestation in Park Point, that was a natural spread, they feel, from Superior, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But that's only about a mile or less away where the kind of epicenter of that infestation over in Superior was.
Right.
Do you know when the emerald ash borer first arrived in the United States?
Well, to the United States, emerald ash borer came over probably on pallets. Wood packaging material is what we call it. Anything that we buy in the store is shipped on a pallet. And this was in the 90s, probably the mid-90s. It came into the Detroit area or maybe Toronto, Canada. And it wasn't found probably for about 6 to 9 years. And that's pretty typical of emerald ash borer. The borers can live in the tree for 2 or 3 years before you even start noticing symptoms, if you're looking closely. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the symptoms don't show up for longer than that, and the tree looks perfectly healthy, but it's got a population of these borers inside it. One of the things that you can do as a resident, if you've got ash trees, you can look for woodpeckers attacking the tree.
Okay, yeah,
and I heard that. And they'll leave flecks of bark down on the ground. So you look for this bark, little chips of bark on the ground, or you look for woodpeckers. If you see woodpecker damage on your ash trees, that's an early indication that you may have emerald ash borer. And the woodpecker damage starts at about 2 or 3 years. So really, to find it early, like they did on Park Point, they go out and intensively sample trees. They cut limbs off, and they strip the bark, and they look for the borers. So mm-hmm. these insects are small. They're hard to find. And when we move firewood, that's primarily how they get from place to place.
How long does it usually take for the trees to die once they're infested?
So when emerald ash borer first infests a tree, the numbers of the beetles are very low. And as I talked about the Manchurian ash, you know, Manchurian ash can grow and the beetles kind of coexist with the tree. Our trees aren't like that, but our trees still try to grow over the damage that those borers cause. And if you only have 2 or 3 borers in the tree can grow over that. The borer can live farther down in the wood. Mm-hmm. You know, usually it's right in the cambium area, but if the tree is growing fast enough, it'll grow over that damage and continue to live. But with the beetles here in the United States, the numbers increase so quickly that the tree becomes overwhelmed. So the first year, you're not going to see any outward signs of damage. Mm-hmm. The second year, you might not see any outward signs of damage. The third year you might begin to, and it's in that second and third year you begin to see that woodpecker damage.
Okay.
So that's an early indicator. Maybe the third and fourth year you may start to see branches in the upper part of the tree die, but there's so many other things that cause ash branches to die that mm-hmm. that's not a very diagnostic characteristic of, emerald ash borer, it does mean that the tree is suffering from something. Then going on into the you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth years, you know, it may take that long for the tree to die. Those beetles begin to, or the borers girdle up above, the new beetles come out, and the closest food source is still right there, that tree. They'll move down the tree and continue to attack the tree, and in about the, you know, fifth to eighth year, the tree will die.
I'm just going to jump in here to remind everyone, you're listening to Conservation Corner on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm Emily Nelson, and I'm talking today with University of Minnesota Extension Educator Mike Reichenbach about the emerald ash borer. You know, Mike, one thing I was wondering, can people expect to see the actual beetles on or around their trees?
Very rarely do people find the beetles themselves. There was a case in Illinois where a woman had found these very pretty small beetles in the spider webs in her garage and had called to say, what are these beetles? I've never seen them before. And they were emerald ash borer. But that is very unusual to find the beetles. I have spent some time down in Chicago in areas that were heavily infested looking for the beetles, peeling the bark off, looking for sometimes you can catch them when they're exiting, when, you know, the tree, and have not found them. It's very unlikely that someone who has an ash tree will see a beetle. You're more likely to see the damage from the woodpecker, and then if you peel the bark off, and the bark will split and crack. So if you're looking, seeing woodpecker damage, and you see splits and cracks up and down the branches of the tree, and you peel those back, you'll probably see this S-shaped gallery that the beetles create. Mm-hmm. And you might find a borer if you peel back the bark and take a knife and dig into the still living wood, because that's where the beetles will be.
And I've read that one sign of the emerald ash borer is that you might find on your trees a D-shaped hole.
Yes. The borers make a D-shaped hole, and there's some interesting characteristics about the D-shaped hole. That D-shaped hole isn't, you know, the flat side of the D isn't, you know, up and down like we write our D's. It's horizontal, and it will be either flat with the circle on the bottom or flat with the circle on the top, depending on how the beetle exits, because the beetle chews their way out. And if you look at the profile of the beetle head on, and you'd have to take a very strong magnifying glass to see this, but the beetles are rather D-shaped, and that's why it makes a D-shaped hole.
What can folks do if they suspect that their tree is infested?
Well, the important thing to do if you suspect your tree is infested is make a phone call to arrest the pest or send a message to arrest the pest using their web services.
Yeah, it's actually very easy. You can take a picture with your phone or your camera and just send it in.
Yes, using the phone and taking a picture is the best way to do it.
Yeah, my mom lives in the Twin Cities, and I found some holes in her ash tree, and they weren't D-shaped, but since she lives really close to a known infestation in Plymouth, I wanted to be sure. So I took some photos of the holes with my phone, and I just sent them in, and someone from Arrest the Pest was in touch with me a couple of days later to let me know that they did not think that it was emerald ash borer. But they were happy to receive my message and check the photos just to be sure. Arrest the Pest is a program run by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and you can find them online at www.mda.state.mn.us/arrestthepest, all one word. You can also reach them by phone. Their number is 1-888-545-6684. Now, Mike, is there anything that can be done to save a tree that's succumbing to emerald ash borer?
Well, if you do want to save your tree, there are some chemical injections, insecticides that can be injected into the tree, and they have been shown to be effective at protecting the tree or keeping the tree healthy and killing beetles that might try to get into the tree. It's an expensive treatment, and it's not a one-time treatment. It's an ongoing type treatment. So you incur some expenses the first time it's done, and then every time thereafter, and it's periodically. And I don't know exactly what the recommendation is right now for how many years between treatments, but yes.
Okay, so that sounds like it might be a good option for a favorite tree next to your house.
It'd be an option for that favorite tree next to your house. And I think an option also to consider, if you have ash trees in your yard, begin thinking about if you want to replace those trees with something else. And then look at the size and space that you have. Think about the type of tree that you really like. And you can even start planting that now. Even though, you know, you might have a yard, planting seedlings can be very effective. There's been almost every state in the union has a program where kids get trees and take them home and plant them.
Yeah.
Some of the studies that have been done on those trees indicate that 40 to 50% of those trees live to maturity. And so we might think that seedlings are very vulnerable in the yards, and they are. They can get mown off and other things can happen. It's also a place that we can really connect to nature and have kids get involved in planting the tree, and you can put a little fence around it and you can really protect it. And so those can be some really low cost ways to begin right now to start replacing those ash trees that you've got in your yard.
How about people who have many acres of land with a lot of ash trees?
If for those folks that have forested lands and many acres, and especially those folks that have like ash swales, the black ash swales, you still want to start thinking about what is it that you want that forest or that area to look like in the future.
Mm-hmm.
We do expect this bore to go through all of our ash forests. There are some other things that we're doing to try to reduce the numbers that the state's doing. But for right now, just expect that if you have ash trees, at some point, mm-hmm. emerald ash borer will get to them. And so also begin thinking about what are the trees that you might want to have growing there. And I've been working with landowners that are beginning to plant things like red maple or balsam poplar, which is typically something that we don't plant. But to get trees started to establish, especially in those black ash swales. The ash trees in an existing forest keep the water table a little bit lower, and once the trees start to die, that water table will come up and it will make it very difficult for you to plant trees there. So you want to start now before the ash trees die.
Will other species that you might plant have a similar impact on the water table once they're established?
Yeah, the other species that get planted in a black ash swale, if they survive, will they help lower the water table? I would say there's potential for them to do that. There's research going on right now at University of Minnesota to look at those things.
Okay.
What trees are the best to plant? How do we go ahead and mitigate the changes in the water table? Some of that research is just starting to come in now, the data. So it's still, you know, going to be a little bit before we have all the data. The important thing is to start planting now.
Is there a resource that you can recommend for people who want to learn more about the emerald ash borer?
Emily, there is a very good resource for landowners, whether you're urban or rural, to learn about emerald ash borer and what to do, you know, what trees to plant, what type of forest do you have. And it was written by a couple of extension educators at the University of Minnesota, Angela Gupta and Julie Midke, with input from a large number of experts in forestry, especially on ash. And it's called Ash Management Guidelines for Private Forest Landowners.
Mm-hmm.
That book will be available on the Soil and Water Conservation District's website, and it contains a history of the ash resource, the ash forests in Minnesota, it goes through ash identification. So that might be one thing. How do I know my tree's an ash? It'll give you some pictures and some ways to identify it. And it goes through emerald ash borer, how it spreads and some of the things that we've already talked about. But probably the most important thing, especially for forest landowners, it talks about the different native plant communities where ash grows. So we have things like the wet forest system, or we have a floodplain forest system. Not too many floodplains in the Arrowhead, not too much around Two Harbors. We see the wet forest system, which is where black ash would grow. You'll see what's called the mesic hardwood system. It's up out of that wet area, and it's a rich, moist soil. So you see that farther south generally. Forested peatland systems are more north, not so much around Two Harbors. And then we've got a fire-dependent system as well. So there's different ash-type forests where ash grows, and it talks about each of those. The book also includes some wildlife among the ash, and finishes up with some implications, but it also has some really good recommendations on what species to plant. And I said it's really important to think about planting, and this book will give you some ideas on what to plant depending on what type of forest you have. The one thing I do want to say is, especially around Two Harbors, one of the very unique things we have is we do have some of those remnant oak communities right in Two Harbors. And if you just go a little bit north from there, you'll find some bur oak. And there's some larger bur oak. And you'll find black ash and bur oak growing right next to each other down in these wet forest systems. The bur oak grow on the little hummocks, the areas that are about 6 inches higher than where the black ash are. And so for the Two Harbors area, bur oak is an excellent species to think about planting as a replacement if you've got forests in that area.
Once trees are infested or dead, is it important to remove them from the landscape?
Yeah, that's a good point. This gets into hazard trees. So if you're in an urban area, or if you're in a rural area and have a forest, but you've got trails through your forest, or you've got deer stands, and you've got ash trees. If there's a tree that's dead, ash do break pretty easily after they die and cause hazards, but you don't have a hazard unless you have a target. So is a person going to be walking under it, or is your deer stand affixed to an ash tree? Those are targets. Those, is something likely to get damaged, or someone likely to get hurt if this tree breaks? If it's in the city, yes, you're going to need to remove that tree, probably pretty quickly. If it's out in the woods, you can leave it for other wildlife to use. The risk there is if you plant trees under it, when that ash tree falls apart and falls down, it may damage those trees you plant. So the answer to that question, Emily, is do I need to remove my tree? It really depends on where that tree is. Mm-hmm. When it falls, if it's going to hit something, or if there's a chance it'll hit something, yes, you should remove it. If it's out in the woods and you rarely go there, probably leave it for the wildlife.
And if dead trees are left standing, do they present a significant fire hazard?
In the woods, what kind of tends to build fire hazards are the fine fuels. So that's the small brush, balsam fir, if you've got a lot of them all together and a lot of dead limb little twigs under there. And once that ignites, it'll ignite the bigger stuff. What happens with ash trees is all the fine twigs and everything fall to the ground, and they pretty quickly decompose. And so when the bigger limbs fall, it's a larger wood that, yes, it'll burn, but it's not as much of a fire hazard as some of our other species.
Do you know how far gone ash trees would need to be before they wouldn't be able to recover with treatment?
Yeah, really with the treatments, the chemical treatments, when we're talking about chemical treatments on these ash trees, you want to go ahead and apply that treatment before your tree gets infested. And so some of the recommendations that I've seen is if we have, say, emerald ash borer in Park Point, and you've got a tree in Duluth that you want to protect, now would be a good time to start doing that. For folks in Two Harbors, probably not yet. It'd be too soon. So wait until it's closer. And yes, that's taking some risk, but you don't want to start too early because it's a repeated treatment.
How close would you say the nearest known infestation should be before you'd recommend starting treatment?
The distance recommendations for treatment before you start doing that, that's a really tough one because the beetle flies, but itself only a couple miles or a mile.
Right.
So you could say, well, I don't want to treat until it's within a couple miles or something. However, the way this beetle really moves is when we move wood materials and firewood.
Okay.
And so it's kind of, yes, if we know we have an infestation a mile or so away, maybe you want to start treating. But you still have risk because we're right along Highway 61. And we want to hopefully encourage people not to move firewood.
So really, people moving firewood is the main way that emerald ash borer is spread.
The spread of emerald ash borer is mainly through the spread of firewood. And so if you're going up to hunting property or you're going up to camp, buy your firewood at the place where you're camping. Don't bring it with you.
Well, I'm sorry to say it, but we've run out of time. Thank you so much for talking with me today, Mike.
Emily, thanks very much for speaking with me. And if you have any questions, please contact me here at the Cloquet Office Extension, University of Minnesota. And if folks want to contact me, they can go ahead and get a hold of me through email at reich027@umn.edu, or they can call me at 218-726-6470.
Thank you. And thanks to our audience for tuning in to another episode of Conservation Corner here on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. Conservation Corner was produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District with funding from the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.